Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan.
Welcome to Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. The COVID-19 vaccine national rollout will begin at the end of the month, and it aims to immunize about 80% of the Malaysian population within a year. But despite repeated assurances from medical experts, many Malaysians remain hesitant towards the COVID-19 vaccines, citing concerns over the type and science behind the vaccines, where it's being developed, efficacy rates and potential short-term and long-term side effects. So tonight on the show, we're going to be addressing these concerns. Joining us, we have Dr. Musa Nordin. He's a consultant pediatrician at KPJ Damansara Specialist Hospital. He's a life member of the Malaysian Pediatric Association, which is a founding member of Immunize for Life, an expert-driven community education initiative aimed at promoting immunization to prevent vaccine-preventable diseases. Good evening, Dr. Musa. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. I understand you've had a very busy day, so we thank you for your time. Let's begin with my first question to you is the types of vaccines and where it was developed. I mean, does the country of origin of the vaccine matter, whether it's from America or China or Russia? Does it matter? Should it matter?
Good evening, Sharad and Melissa. There are four platforms whereby the vaccines are manufactured. Yeah, and it doesn't matter where the origin of the vaccine are. The most important thing is that we want to see the evidence that it is efficacious and that it is safe. And that means it needs to be published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, i.e., and it must be undertaken in a randomized controlled trial. So the four platforms that we have are the classical inactivated vaccines. These are mainly from China, from Sinopharm and Sinovac. And then we have the viral protein, yeah, the spike protein. And this is the most recent was the one that was from Novavax. They recently published their, no, they not recently, they published their studies by press release. And then the third is the vector-based COVID vaccines. There are three, yeah? AstraZeneca with Oxford University, and then there's the Sputnik V from Russia, and then there's the most recent J&J vaccine. And of course, the most contemporary is the messenger RNA vaccine, namely from Pfizer and Moderna.
Musa, though, you know, I mean, you've explained the science of it very clearly, but it still doesn't necessarily address the kind of deep-seated prejudices people might have about medicines coming from authoritarian regimes like China and Russia, or people who don't know about the scientific community, how globalized it is, and so on and so forth. I mean, what would you say to them? They would say, yeah, okay, you can publish it, but do you trust the numbers? How do we know the numbers are even real?
That is why it's extremely important for us as scientists to validate and verify their claims. We need to see it published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, like the mRNA candidate vaccines, yeah, from Pfizer and Moderna, was published in the New England Journal of Medicine. AstraZeneca, in collaboration with University of Oxford, was published in The Lancet. So we were able to see the numbers and verify the claims of the manufacturers. The concern with the Chinese vaccines, notably Sinopharm and Sinovac, is that they were never published, i.e. their phase trials were never published in a peer-reviewed scientific journal, right? They have made claims. Sinopharm made claims that in China, the efficacy was 79%. They did studies in the UAE, the efficacy was 86%. These were all in press releases. Similarly, with the Sinovac Chinese vaccine, there were three trials, one in Brazil with a 50% efficacy, the other one was Indonesia with 68%, and another one in Turkey with 91%. So, never published. But the Sputnik adenovirus vaccine was only recently published by the Russians, and they showed an efficacy of 91%.
So, okay, so just to come to follow up on Sharad's question, Dr. Musa, I'm wondering, I mean, media are reporting all these different efficacy rates, and you've also laid it out for us, but how do we understand it? You know, there are many people out there who say, I would want to take this type of vaccine from this specific country and this specific brand name, but I refuse, or I'm skeptical about these other vaccines. So you've laid out the efficacy rates for us, but how should we understand it? Or does it even matter?
Okay. Well, the simple answer is that if there is any vaccine available that has been ratified by the NPRA, the National Pharmaceutical Regulatory Agency, take it, grab it, yeah? Because the manufacturers are scrambling to try and get raw materials to make the vaccine, yeah? And at this point in time, the NPRA has only licensed the Pfizer mRNA vaccines for use in Malaysia. But we hope very soon they would be registering the AstraZeneca vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, and the Chinese and the supply from Russia. So when I say that the efficacy of the mRNA vaccine is 95%, what it means is that the vaccine prevents me from getting the disease 95%. That's amazing. That is as good as the MMR vaccine that we use for measles, mumps, and rubella. Still, no medicine is perfect. About 5% will still get the disease. But it has been shown in trials that the 5% who do experience COVID illness is mild and asymptomatic, i.e. category 1 and category 2, which means they are not severe. They do not require to be hospitalized. They do not require intensive care. They do not require respiratory support in the intensive care unit. That is the power of being 95% efficacious in protecting you from getting COVID-19.
Musa, it does seem like there are two dimensions to the taking of the vaccine. One is to prevent you as an individual. The other is that it prevents you from passing it on. And so the collective good, or the public good of one taking the vaccine, is the other dimension. Could you help us understand about efficacy rates in terms of the transmission issue and actually dampening the spread of the virus and therefore ending the pandemic?
Great question, Shura. This is something in the back of our mind. Now, the primary objective of the COVID vaccine trials, number one, to prevent you from getting the disease, right? Now that it is proven, is the second objective. The secondary objective is to investigate, to examine whether it prevents the transmission of the disease. Now, we have got some really good insight. Just yesterday, I think, AstraZeneca in the United Kingdom, in collaboration with the University of Oxford, showed that the AstraZeneca vaccine actually reduces asymptomatic carriage of the virus, which means if you reduce carriage, you will reduce transmission. And similarly, if you look carefully at the Moderna trials, they are saying that 60% of those who were swabbed, yeah, in between the first and the second dose, showed that there was reduction in asymptomatic carriage of the virus in the throat, which means 60%, i.e. there will be less transmission. And I think you can rationalize this because the vaccine does prevents you from coughing, prevents you from sneezing, so that is less airborne spread, number one. Number two, the vaccine actually reduces the viral load of the virus in your upper airway, so that will reduce the transmission. Thirdly, we know many vaccines actually sterilizes the upper airway. It eliminates the virus from the upper airway, so they will never transmit the virus at all. So that is really good news. But we wait for this to be verified by trials, because they will look at the vaccine for another 31.
Well, on that note, Dr. Musa, I mean, the time period, and we've only been dealing with this pandemic for a year, and the vaccines have been in development during that time, a safe vaccine does not mean that it's completely free from any side effects or adverse events. Are there concerns about negative effects, either short-term or long-term? Are those concerns warranted?
Thank you very much, Melissa. This is the greatest concern of the public, yeah, whether the vaccine is safe or not. Now, in vaccinology trials, you must give a grace period for at least 2 months. Then you can uncover, you can unravel the minor and major side effects. So all the trials have gone through this 2 months grace period, and it has been shown that the adverse effects following immunization, AEFI, are minimal. For example, with the mRNA vaccine, the commonest side effect with the first dose is pain. It is very painful, according to my friend, 80%. Yeah, and then you get a bit of redness, about 5%. You get a bit of tenderness, another 6%. And this usually disappears within 1 or 2 days. The systemic side effects, the commonest ones are fever, 15%, fatigue, 60%, headache, another 50%, and then myalgia, muscle ache, this is about 30%. These are the main ones. And the person who suffers the most of these systemic side effects are those under 55, and it's usually worse with the second dose. So these are the minor side effects, really. The major side effects, when they studied the placebo group and the vaccine group, was 1%, about the same. So no major side effects attributable to the vaccine. There are three other side effects, major. One is lymph adenopathy, a swelling of the lymph nodes. This is expected because that's where the antibodies are produced. Secondly is Bell's palsy, weakness of the face. It is not much more than the baseline of Bell's palsy in the community. Now, the third one is the most worrying. In the mRNA trials, it was found that 11 out of 1 million in the Pfizer trials developed anaphylaxis. This is a very severe reaction. There's a drop in the blood pressure. The patient may faint. 11 per million. With the Moderna vaccine, it is 2.5 per million. Okay, let us put this in perspective. The risk of a Malaysian getting COVID is 1 in 200. The risk of you developing this severe anaphylaxis is 1 in 400,000, which means the risk of you getting COVID is 2,000 times compared to you getting the anaphylactic reaction. So this is a risk-benefit analysis. You know the risk.
But, you know, Musa, I do want to ask you this. You know, you're a doctor. Sorry. You're a doctor with, you know, with great bedside manners, I assume. The numbers might not be reassuring for the individual, right? They might say, what if I'm that small percentage of people who are going to have this toxic shock, whatever, response to the thing, and then say, well, for that reason alone, I don't want to take it. What would you say to them?
Oh, I'll tell them first. My first question is that, have you ever had an anaphylactic shock before? If the answer is no, then I will tell him that it is very, very, very unlikely that you would get the anaphylactic shock with the mRNA vaccine. By the way, there were no incidences of anaphylactic shock with either the inactivated Chinese vaccine or the viral vector vaccine or with the viral protein vaccine. It's just the mRNA. And why? We think this is because of the PEG. It's a substance in the nanoparticle, polyethylene glycol, right? It's a new particle. That's why. Now, that same person, I will ask him, do you have any eczema, any allergic syndromes, you know, any allergies to food substances? If the answer is yes, then I'll say the vaccine is still safe, but let's give you the vaccine, let's keep you in the hospital for about half an hour for observation, because if it's going to happen, it will happen within the first 15 to 30 minutes. So it is safe to be taken.
All right. Well, Dr. Musa, there's still so much to cover. We're going to take a quick break here and consider this, but we'll come back and continue this conversation, particularly how the vaccination process is going to be implemented. Let's come back to this conversation after these messages. Stay tuned.